Now, as you are probably all aware, I'm no longer a member of the Singles Club. In fact, my membership of that club expired almost 22 years ago. Now, just in case you're wondering, I don't regret ever being a member of that club, but in some ways I do feel that perhaps I stayed in that club for too long. A bit of a regret I think I have. Now, I've got nothing personally against the Singles Club. It's just that longer term, it wasn't for me. For those of you who are single, and by that I mean those of you who aren't married, now one of the things that God wants you to consider as you grow up is what your gift is when it comes to sexuality. And we've just seen from 1 Corinthians 7, the Apostle Paul, he touches on the issue of singleness and marriage. And his basic recommendation is, if possible, being a member of the Singles Club is actually a great club to belong to, but only if you can hack it. We can see this from what he says basically in verse 7 and also verse 8. In verse 7 he says, I wish that all were as I myself am. And he's implying there that he's single. And we can see this from verse 8 when he says, to the unmarried and to the widows, I say that it's good for them to remain single as I am. So the first question we have today is to consider, why is it that belonging to the Singles Club is so cool as far as Paul is concerned? Well, Paul's basic principle, it's expressed in verses 17 through to 24 of this chapter. And basically, as a Christian, the default position is we need to live as Christians in our current life situation. As Christians, we need to be content with serving God in the circumstances in which we currently find ourselves. Sure, if opportunities arise to better our social, educational, or financial status, then make use of those opportunities to glorify God. But if we're always going around thinking, oh, I need a change, I need something in my life to be different, then in a way, you're lacking faith in God in your present circumstances. Being in a good relationship with God isn't supposed to be dependent on external factors. So applying this to the issue of singleness, don't think that there's anything wrong with being single. If you're single right at this moment in time, and that seems to be most of us here, then God actually wants you to serve him in your singleness today and every other day that you're still single. In fact, being single has certain advantages over being married. And Paul talks about these in verses 25 through to 38. Now, Paul says early on in that passage, those who marry will have worldly troubles. The basic issue is that living in this world isn't easy. And once a person gets married, you start adding burdens onto yourself. Now, you might think that dealing with your own problems is enough for you to deal with on a daily basis, but when you're married, you don't have just to deal with your own problems. You've also got your spouse's problems to deal with. You've got your spouse's family's problems to deal with. And once the children arrive, things go up another level of complexity, and you have to deal with your children's problems and later on possibly even your grandchildren's problems. The way Paul puts it, the married person has divided interests. The married person is no longer free to just simply consider, how can I please God today? Sure, a married person also needs to consider the same question, how can I please God today? But really, that's a loaded question when you're married. Because it's a little bit like, okay, how can I serve God today while dropping off Amelia to school, taking Johnny to the dentist, changing Terry's nappy 5 times a day, while breastfeeding Katrina, while cooking the dinner for the family, and finishing off my husband's tax return that was due 2 years ago? Like, yeah, and you want me to attend the church Bible study tonight? Thank you. Now, in theory, it's a lot easier serving God when you're single, because more or less, it's basically just you and God that you've got to worry about. So, according to Paul, membership of the singles club actually has some significant benefits. Single people have a lot more freedom and a lot less things to worry about than married people. So, if you're single, make the most of that in thinking about how you can use your time and freedom in serving God. So, overall, there's nothing wrong with being single. However, singleness isn't for everyone. Most people who are members of the singles club will actually one day end up leaving that club and they'll partner up. In fact, statistics suggest that less than 1% of adults will stay virgins for the whole of their life. So what does that mean? I think it means that the vast majority of singles will actually have to face the issue of finding a partner. It's important for us then, as Christians, to think about this issue. How are Christians meant to transition from singleness to a partnered state? Now, it's quite common these days, I think, for young Christians growing up to be influenced by the culture around us when it comes to lots of things, and including sexual relationships. Now, some of this is obvious, such as when marriage between members of the opposite sex is viewed as old-fashioned, and when faithfulness within marriage is no longer valued. But even when it comes to issues of dating and boyfriends and girlfriends, it's relatively easy for Christians to simply just go with the flow, to follow the world more than following God. Now, it should be noted at this point that the Bible says nothing about boyfriends and girlfriends. In fact, according to Google Ngram, which looks at the frequency of words over time, the concept of boyfriends and girlfriends really only started to emerge back at the beginning of last century. And in particular, it was from the 1960s, as you can see from that graph there, that this concept of boyfriends and girlfriends became a lot more popular. Guess what also happened back in the 1960s? Yeah, that was when the sexual revolution began in the West. So it's interesting to see that correspondence there. So if you're single and grown up and you think that getting a girlfriend or a boyfriend is the next step for you, then I would suggest your thinking isn't straight at this point. Don't complicate things and open yourself up to the possibility of temptation by thinking, I need a boyfriend or a girlfriend. Instead of that, I strongly recommend that we should be paying attention to what the Apostle Paul has to say here in verses 7 and 9 of this chapter. In verse 7, Paul acknowledges that each person has their own gift from God. Now, Paul himself, he might have been satisfied living as a single person, but as we've seen, the gift of celibacy is actually rare. One of the key questions that you will have as a Christian growing up, you have to ask this question: has God given me the gift of celibacy, or has he given me the gift of an active sexuality? Now, I don't know if that sounds like a hard question to you, but I don't think it's actually a hard question to answer. We know that the vast majority of people have not been blessed with the gift of celibacy. And practically, as you grow up, if you find your thoughts wandering about members of the opposite sex and you long to develop such a relationship one day, then that's most likely your answer right there. If that's you, then you don't have the gift of celibacy, right? And what that means is, according to the Apostle Paul, you need to prepare yourself for marriage. That is how Paul puts it in verse 9. Speaking to the unmarried and widows, he says, if they can't exercise self-control, they should marry. For it's better to marry than to burn with passion. Now, I think Paul's view here is actually very simple and very practical. If you don't have the gift of celibacy, if some kind of sexual drive exists within you, then simply get married. And this, I believe, is the proper Christian position. If you are grown up and the mating instinct is part of who you are, then, as a Christian, you're to prepare yourself for marriage. So from a Christian perspective, this means leaving behind the issue of boyfriends and girlfriends and thinking instead of what you should be doing to find your future husband or wife. It's a little bit of a different focus here. According to what Paul says, if you are single and you do not or cannot stay that way, what you need isn't a boyfriend or girlfriend or any casual encounter for that matter. No, what you need is to find a person of the opposite sex to whom you can get married. So, taking this perspective, let's explore a little about what this might look like for a Christian who is single. And I would suggest, logically speaking, the following five steps. First of all, you need to understand what God's plan is for marriage. And one of the key passages to consider here is Ephesians 5. In Ephesians 5, Paul talks about how the husband is supposed to model himself on Jesus. Through self-sacrificial love, the husband is to most of all beautify or to sanctify his wife spiritually while also looking after her physical needs and the needs of the family. And the wife, well, she's supposed to model herself on the church, willingly following the leadership exercised by her husband and helping and supporting him in that role. Now, once you've understood the biblical picture for God's plan of marriage, which is summarised there in Ephesians 5 and other passages in the Bible, then basically the next step is to develop yourself to match up with the criteria that God would like to see in you as a married person. So, for example, if you're a woman and you don't have the gift of celibacy, then you've got to think about what does the Bible say about the role of a wife and the things that she should be developing within herself, the things that she should be good at doing for her family. If you're a man, likewise, you don't have the gift of celibacy. If a key part of your responsibility as a husband, according to Ephesians 5, is to beautify your wife spiritually, well, that means you need to be thinking about developing a godly character for yourself. Like, how are you going to be able to lead your family in godliness if that's not you yourself? If you're supposed to be modelling yourself on Christ as a husband, the question is, to what extent are you getting to know Jesus now in order to be like him when you're married? We need to prepare ourselves for what the future will be. Thirdly, while working on developing yourself, also start to think about and to develop biblical criteria that will help you choose whom you're going to marry. For example, as Christians, there are certain things the Bible tells us about who we can marry. And the Bible tells us that we can only marry, for example, non-married adult believers of the opposite sex who are not immediately related to ourselves. Okay, so you see the five basic biblical criteria there. A fellow believer who is sexually mature, not married, opposite sex, and not immediately related to us. But in addition to those five basic criteria, if you just take those five and apply it to people living in the world today, there's a lot of people out there, right? Well, how do you narrow it down a little bit here? Okay, well, here we can add in personal preferences, practical criteria, okay, things like preferred age, preferred nationality or linguistic background, their personality, likes or dislikes, family background, etc. When it comes to those kind of personal and practical things, the Bible actually gives us freedom here as Christians to choose what we prefer. But I would just say, any of those personal and practical factors, obviously, they should be reasonable. They should also be practical and not based on any kind of unbiblical prejudice. There is, however, one criteria that I would strongly urge you to think about if you are single but want to change that status. And this is the criteria of godliness that you can see at the bottom of the list there. If you are a godly person yourself, and if that's important to you, then it should also be important to you to find someone who has a similar kind of outlook on life. Someone else who is also interested in godliness. Now, I would strongly encourage you, as single people, not just to accept anyone who fits the five basic criteria. If you're just going for the five basic criteria, you might be 23, you might get married to a 60-year-old bloke or something. Well, that could perhaps be your personal preference, right? But obviously, we can be a bit more specific here and think about what would be good for us here. In particular, if you're a committed Christian, finding someone else who is committed in the same way as you will have benefit for yourself. It's going to be better for you if you marry someone who also is themselves godly and spiritually mature. Now, if you end up marrying someone who's a Christian but not a strong Christian, well, no sin has been committed on your part, but I would say it's not wise. If you end up marrying someone whose faith is weak, well, you really have no right to complain down the track that your husband or wife isn't as godly as they should be, because, after all, you chose that person to be your spouse. So do you get what I'm saying here? I'm not saying don't get married until you find Mr. or Miss Perfect, because they don't exist in this world. But you should be looking out for Mr. Godly or Miss Godly as much as possible if godliness is important to you. So having thought about the appropriate criteria, we can go to the fourth step, which is to develop relationships with a view to marriage. Now, whether it be through church or family contacts, through introductions by friends, or just getting to know people at uni or in the workplace, it's important to spend a bit of time surveying the field, I would suggest. Knowing the biblical criteria, we can then spend some time, while we're young, seeing who might match up with the criteria that we've developed. The idea is start to get to know people and then see what happens. What you'll find is, hopefully, a number of eligible bachelors or bachelorettes among whom you can choose your future spouse, provided, of course, that they are interested in you too. And I would say, I think it's important at this stage of just surveying the field, don't think that there's any need to rush things. Now, in general, a good principle is marriage shouldn't be rushed, but it shouldn't be delayed either. If you're able to exercise self-control when it comes to your sexuality and you've got a bit of time up your sleeve, that means you don't need to rush. A wise person during this period of time will be concerned to understand these matters. To understand God's plan for marriage, to develop personal godliness, to think about appropriate criteria, and then to see who God will bring into your path who matches the criteria. And of course, the fifth and final step, that's really the big one, isn't it, here? After surveying the options, getting to know a few candidates, there will come a time when you have to make your choice based on the criteria. As I said just now, you're not going to find the perfect match. But as long as you both meet the biblical criteria, and the closer you come to meeting each other's personal and practical criteria, then if you both feel you've had enough of being members of the singles club and you would like to start a new family unit together, then by all means, go for it. Organise the wedding, sign the papers, and enjoy being one flesh spiritually and physically with your spouse. Now, if you follow something like those five steps that I've just mentioned to you, I'm prepared to help you too, right? I'm ready. I'll have the marriage certificate printed out and ready for you to sign in no time. Just ask Brendan. He's experienced that. So overall, friends, if you're single, please think about how you can use your singleness wisely. Make sure to make the most of your singleness in serving God. And when it comes time to transition away from singleness, please keep in mind that the end goal of this whole process, basically, is marriage. So preparing well for marriage, it should be an important part of our life while we're still single. And we need to prepare for what God has in store for us. Anyway, any questions about what we've looked at today?
A lot of people think they're looking for the one.
Yeah.
But from what you've just said, there could be lots of ones. Or...
Yeah. There's lots of people out there that meet the biblical criteria. And God gives us freedom within that then to choose the one. What's required at that point, therefore, is wisdom, right? Wisdom is important because out of all the ones that fit the biblical criteria, like for you talking about, there could be millions looking at a worldwide scale, right? Millions of people out there who could fit that criteria for you. Practically, sure, you're not going to meet most of them, so you can eliminate those people. But within those that you will get to know about somehow, let's use wisdom here to choose.
You've solved your pair, so probably one of which ones have got to.
Well, I would say God's one is the one that meets the criteria, okay? So, in other words, God's one is to meet the criteria and the person that you choose and commit your life to. So if you end up there signing the papers, that's the one. I don't think necessarily God has just one person in mind. Obviously, God knows the future and he's already planned things out. But let me tell you, in relation to myself marrying this beautiful young woman, yeah, she's still young down here. She was at least when I met her. Right, God did not say she is the one. She didn't have like blinking lights on top of her head saying, this is the one, Stephen. Just so happened, biblical criteria, I end up being somewhere. Actually, we met in a church of all places. That's a pretty good idea, yeah. And I would say, well, so far, I think it's worked out okay, right?
The way in which you phrase boyfriend and girlfriend,
yeah,
not a good idea, are you saying that we shouldn't spend time dating someone and investigating relationship then?
Mm-hmm. Okay, what I'm saying there is, growing up in this world, this stage of development when you reach puberty and so on, and at school, it's always the talk of the school, isn't it? Who's boyfriend or girlfriend with everyone? So as that happens, we naturally just take that in as Christians, right? We think, okay, I need to find a boyfriend and girlfriend. Just seems like a natural thing to do. What I'm saying is, hang on here, let's not just follow the way of the world. We need to actually think about what's biblical here. And what Paul says is, if you're having trouble controlling your sexuality, you need to get married. So basically, as Christians, I would say, what you need to be thinking about, instead of boyfriend, girlfriend, is, okay, who's my future partner going to be? So develop the criteria, but then there's a certain period of time, which I've suggested here, which is getting to know people. During that period of time, you can get to know people as friends. Once you work out getting to know people, you'll also work out, do you have similar views about things? Are you interested in one another? Then ask the question. We've got to think about marriage more than just boyfriends and girlfriends from a biblical point of view.